Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
In the last number of years in Dublin particularly, that has been replaced because from my experience, loads of people hated that part where they're standing at the top of the church and they're waiting there for a half an hour, 40 minutes, shaking hands with people they don't even know. Yeah. And all the families say, oh God, I don't want to do that.
Welcome to Grief Encounters with me, Sasha Hamrogue.
And I'm Venetia Quick. We're a weekly podcast that looks at an issue that affects us all and yet remains so difficult to talk about.
We'll be chatting to guests from all walks of life on the subject of death and all that comes with it.
Our main aim is to motivate, comfort, and create a modern space for people to share their own experiences.
Could you think of someone that could benefit in listening? Tell them about Grief Encounters, out every single Tuesday.
On this week's episode of Grief Encounters, myself and Sasha are talking to Gus Nichols of Nichols Funeral Directors and Jonathan Stafford of Stafford's Funeral Homes. Now, from the very outset of the podcast, aside from hearing people's stories, we wanted also to find a few episodes where we'd offer practical advice that would hopefully prove resourceful and helpful to people who perhaps are stuck in the lovely situation of grief for the first time, or if they're helping somebody. And one of those things that we really wanted to do from the beginning was an episode on funerals.
Yeah. And, you know, I think in a way it's also cathartic for people who've experienced a funeral maybe recently or even one in the past, because they just stay with you forever. So looking back and maybe feeling like through this episode, you might feel like you're a little less alone because of stuff like family arguments and all the different things that the guys talk about it so well, because they live this every single day. One of the things that we talked about afterwards, we were all laughing about this and it's terrible, but like when you pick up someone's ashes.
Yeah, they're really, really heavy.
They're really, really heavy.
They are, which makes it a sense, because I remember I carried my husband's ashes home. We went to pick them up. And then I went back to her house for a cup of tea. And then I carried them home from her house, which is about a kilometre and a half. And there was a rugby match on around the corner, like an international. So the road was packed and everyone was walking on the street. And I was walking along, one of my kids with a kid's scooter over my shoulder. carrying Martin's ashes in a bag, going, these are bloody heavy.
And these are the things.
But it makes sense, because he was a tall guy.
Of course,
like, he was 6'1", of course. You know, it's like,
but I think people think they're going to pick up this little tiny box. And it's those kinds of things that they talk us through. They talk us through an awful lot of different things as well about some of the, you know, just some tips to make sure when you are sitting down on those first initial hours and days and you're looking at what's ahead, you're in a blur. And look, I think it's so hard for everyone, because most of the time you don't have a lot of experience. Why would you in that area? So it's a first time for everyone. It can be intimidating, very intimidating. Who writes the eulogy? Who doesn't write the eulogy?
Delivers the eulogy?
Exactly.
As well.
And also family things raise, like different ways to do it. And I think that's what we love. Both, I could see you and I really like kind of, it's no longer the traditional way is the prescribed way to do it. There's different ways to do it now.
100%.
And also, we should talk about this real quick before we start. It's just that you should start thinking about what you want. That
and
came out of this.
People know. I mean, I think that came across quite a lot, that if you do know, not only are you helping your family, because remember, this is your last big gig. This is your last big party. you know, don't you want it to be something
that reflects you
yeah. and your life and yeah. you have your songs and whatever way you want to have it. So I think this is quite, and also I don't want people to be put off thinking that because we're talking about funerals, it's all gloom and doom. We actually had a lot of laughs in this one.
It is actually probably one of the funniest episodes we've done. So yeah, enjoy.
Whether a death is anticipated or if it happens all of a sudden, the amount of preparation that's involved in organizing the subsequent funeral can be shocking and can be really, really overwhelming to someone close to the deceased. Since the beginning of this podcast, we really, really wanted to create an episode looking at the practicalities surrounding this, as it's something that's really rarely discussed. To help us do so, we are delighted today to be joined by Gus Nichols of Nichols Funeral Directors and Jonathan Stafford of Stafford Funeral Homes. Like I just said, we've been wanting to make this episode for a really long time, and I think it's for people not only who have gone through this to kind of have that bit of catharsis to know that they're not the only ones, but also for people to think about their own death and to think about what they would want. Because I think what Venetia and I have talked a lot about is that after we lost people we loved, our own mortality became something we actually started to think about. And we want that conversation to happen a little bit more so that people are aware of what they want. Thank you for joining us. And I suppose the first question is, do you think it is important for people to start thinking about these things kind of long before their time is coming?
Yeah, as funeral directors myself and Gus, we've often had conversations about this over the years. And like, it makes everything so much, you know, it's a terrible thing to say, but easier. Like, if you have an idea, if you have a plan, you know what you want, it's amazing. Whereas the confusion and the grief and the pure outpouring of just raw emotion makes decisions so much more difficult if people don't know what they want to do.
And it doesn't have to be very complicated. It can be a simple letter to, you know, attach to a will, and everyone should make a will, by the way, but and it could be just a paragraph. I want these five things, and the rest you can sort out yourselves. Mm. And that, even that's a great guide and help. You don't have to be drafting notices and designing tributes.
Yeah. I absolutely agree.
I mean, it doesn't have to even be somebody that's in a position where they should be planning their funeral. It could be something just we could all do now as we go along, just write a little note and maybe tell people that's where it is.
Even an email, you know, if you have that evidence to say, well, look, because families can be very, I would say, difficult, particularly at emotional times. So you have these arguments between different members of the family. And if somebody has a simple email, say, look, this is what they said. They said this in an email. Mm. It's very, you know, you can clearly see it's from them. That's what they wanted. Mm. And it can be, obviously, the written note would be obviously better. But just, as you said, if it's at a time in their lives where you just wouldn't expect them to die. Like I said to you earlier on, my mum just literally dropped dead, 52 years of age. But because she, you know, we were in the business we were in, she used to tell me all the time the little things she wanted. No, I don't want this, and I don't want an open coffin, and I just want a single rose. And, you know, so it really helped me.
Yeah, I mean, it was very something actually that the Sunday before Martin died, he saw an ad for the funeral director he wanted. And he said, oh, if anything happens, I want them. And I was like, okay, grand, note to self, not realizing it would be so quick. But there was other things, like he didn't want to be made up afterwards. He didn't want any makeup. And I was sort of like, grand, okay, we'll put shades on. So, but it's sort of, it was, you know, it's little things like that, don't you think, Gus, that are very, very important to people. I mean, some people feel very strongly about that, but they would never vocalize it to anybody close to them.
Yeah. And it is not everybody. Mm. Some people will just avoid the topic completely forever.
Mm.
And it's for someone else to sort out when the sad day comes.
Yeah.
You were just talking about planning. On a practical sense, there is a very good website called thinkahead.ie, and it's produced by the Irish Hospice Foundation.
Wow.
And it's not just about funerals, but that's one part of it. It's a really easy to use use platform where you can record wishes on end of life care, finances, where X, Y, and Z is, and what you want to happen. And if people listening to this now feel that this is a good idea and you don't want to necessarily go and see a solicitor or someone like Jonathan or me, just go online and have a look at thinkahead.ie. It's actually very good.
You mentioned some people don't want to talk about it, and that was my case with my parents. They were young and they were dying, and they didn't They just did not, they just couldn't go there. One area I found quite difficult was cremation versus burial, to make that decision. Mm. Is that kind of one that people who haven't made decisions yet comes up quite a bit?
I think so, yeah. That would be the number one question. Oh no, he never said or she never said. Like, interesting enough, again, going back to, from a personal point of view, my grandfather was a funeral director for whatever, 60 years, or, you know, he started the business quite early. And he died of cancer and he wouldn't discuss it. And if anybody in the family had 8 children, if anybody brought it up at all, very near the time, he would take the head off them. And now, he did want to be buried because he'd bought his own grave, but that's okay. Different. And in fairness, when he died, cremation wasn't really that popular anyway. But it is amazing the amount of people don't even have that one. They should really, that's one thing from this podcast, really just even say that, oh, I'd like to be buried or cremated.
Yeah.
I've often had the situation where we have a family and one half wants burial and the other half wants cremation. And usually you would probably, or suggest maybe cremation, because ashes can always go into a grave and you can record a name and a headstone. But that doesn't suit everybody. On occasions where there is a complete breakdown and a dispute and disagreement, the next question that Jonathan and I are asked is, well, there may be a wife or a husband here. Is there an executor? Because ultimately the executor will, if asked, have to make the final decision. And on a practical level, sometimes we have to go down, we have to ask that question.
Yeah, it is a huge thing, I think, cremation versus burial. But there's another, I think, extension to that as well, is if the person is cremated, what happens to the ashes? And who gets the ashes? And do they want to be divvied up? Which I think becomes a huge problem, especially when perhaps it's a younger person and there's a family in law or that scenario. Should all that be planned? Do you?
Yeah, well, again, it depends on the particular family, it depends on the person involved. Because, as you know, some people would kind of look at it, well, ashes to ashes, dust to dust, you know, they're really not me, I'm gone, so don't worry about it, I don't really mind. But then you do have the specific family. So it's brilliant if somebody said, like, again, going back to a personal point of view, my mum told exactly where you wanted the ashes to go. We split the ashes, which I know the Catholic Church came out against it recently, didn't they?
You can't split ashes in Germany.
Yeah.
It's against the law.
Yeah.
Is it?
Yeah.
Wow, I didn't know that.
But here you can do what you like.
Yeah, no, because I have a friend who brings parts of her granny everywhere she went, because her granny always wanted to travel the world. No. And so that's what she does. Whereas I would have an issue divvying up ashes, because to me it's somebody's body, and I sort of feel I don't want them to have the right arm and them to have the left arm. Do you know what I mean? To me, that, but it's a very personal thing. But I think that would be something I would have liked personally to have been decided before the event, because I think that would be up to the person.
Well, and I'm sure Jonathan's the same. We treat ashes with the same level of seriousness as a body. We record it in the same way. They're safely and stored. We ensure that they're collected and signed for by the right person.
Do you find, sorry to cut across you, do you find an awful lot of families, you know, you can ring them a good few times and just leave the ashes there? I find that amazing. Mm. Yeah, we've ashes there for years and I phone regularly and, no, we're not ready yet, Jonathan. We'll tell you when. And you
well, know, every 5 or 6 years, Jonathan, we bury maybe 5, 6, 7 sets of ashes in a grave, which we can reopen if needed.
Yeah.
This is where we have run out of road. We've tried 15, 20 times to contact the person and they've just gone off the grid and they just don't want to deal with it. So at least we know where they are, but we can't keep storing them.
I think that speaks so much to the power of how these things affect us and how denial and not being able to
You know, absolutely.
That's what this podcast, I mean, it's all about the different facets of grief. But one of the things about grief is not everyone is having these healthy kind of process where a lot of people can't face it because it's such a huge moment in their lives.
And it really is.
I wanted to ask you guys a little bit about, you know, I'm sure it's different for everyone, but maybe we can just talk a little bit about how you guys come in, how the process works. So for me, it was both my parents died in a hospice, and then the next morning I was visited by a funeral director, and we kind of went through choosing what was needed. But none of it was really, it wasn't done in advance. It was all done that morning, like where I was kind of, and I did it, you know, with my sister. We just kind of made those decisions. How does it work? How does it normally work when you're in that circumstance?
So every case is different. We would always recommend that the family come into us, you know, to control conditions. Sometimes if you go to the house or the hospice, the phone keeps ringing, people keep coming in and out. You're, you know, you're in it, your little office space, and you go through the process. You try and explain to the family what's going to happen next. You know, you're obviously going to say, we're going to take a few little notes here and try and get an idea of what they would like, as in what the deceased was would like, and then what they would like, and try and gel everything together. And it's, you know, not every funeral is the same. I would say, and Gus will totally agree with me, like every single day I learn something new. Every single somebody comes up with a different idea. And Gus will also agree in this, nowadays it's much more personal than, say, our father's times, where you just did everything the kind of Catholic Church wanted, or, you know, the local rector, you know, you had your removal, your funeral, whereas now there's so much more that you can do. So we'd sit there and listen as much as possible. I mean, you know, that's, I suppose, that's the key to life anyways, listen and then guide them. Yeah, guide them.
When I meet a family, first of all, yes, there's an initial bit of explanation required, because they're hearing words really they might have only heard in the, on the TV or in movies, like coroner and mortuary and death certificates. So that needs explanation, because the whole system there that kicks in when someone dies in the state.
Yeah, and you might have to do it two or three times.
Yeah. And that has to be explained, because that will dictate perhaps when the funeral can happen. Then I try and paint a picture once I've had a chat to them. Well, it's a church funeral and we want to go to Glasnevin, or we want to go to wherever, or we want to go to Spain. Or I try and paint a picture of what's going to happen for the next 3 or 4 days, so they can actually see it in their head. Okay, well, yeah, Wednesday we're doing this and Thursday we're doing that. That's fine. And then I fill in the other parts to it, whether it's wording for an announcement or flowers or live streaming, or, you know, which a humanist settlement or whatever's needed. You build that around it. And I find, I'm sure Jonathan agrees, that once you've painted the picture, you've had that 40, 45 minutes, shouldn't go over an hour. Families are too tired to concentrate for longer than that. You can see them relax and go, okay, right, well, Jonathan knows what we want. That's
it's sort of reassurance,
yeah,
isn't it?
It's a reassurance, exactly. That's the right word.
Yeah.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
If you're looking for a safe haven to express how you feel, share articles, photos, and memories of your loved ones, join the Grief Encounters Facebook group, a place for support, compassion, and empathy for those grieving.
What is the hope that the emotional, that the process, the whole process of the of a funeral, what is the hope that it kind of give someone, and the emotional journey that they go on? Because I think everyone does feel there's probably commonalities in what people feel throughout it. What would you guys hope that a funeral would do for someone?
Well, I hope that 3 weeks, 3 months afterwards, they can reflect on it and go, okay, we might have done a few things differently, but by and large, we marked the moment in the right way. And if they say that to me, I'm happy. that we've done that in very simple terms.
Totally agree, yeah. Mm. Absolutely.
In one way, it's sort of the last sort of, I mean, the person's never going to have a birthday again. They're never going to have, you know, a party, whatever. So in one way, in my view, it's their last
send-off,
party.
Yeah.
It's their send-off, and it should sort of reflect the person and maybe, you know, how they live their life.
I think you're right. I think everybody should think that way. I mean, you know, my own father, it's alive and going well. His whole idea is that his funeral, he wants to basically have a party. You know, he celebrate his life. Yeah. He basically, look, it is his last time.
Yeah.
You're not going to see him again.
Yeah.
It's all over. And he really wants us to take the rock the house down, you know. That's the way he wants to do it.
Yeah, I mean, we sort of, we had AC/DC going back down the aisle from Martin's, but it was sort of, which the rector sort of, it was the one thing, he was happy with the photos, he was happy with all the other tunes I picked, but it was sort of, that was the one he held off on.
That's,
but he let
brilliant.
Us in the end.
I do that.
Good.
I would do that as well.
You see, I think he thought it was going to be Highway to Hell, so I think that's, he got a bit upset. Would you recommend, I mean, I sort of personally felt, just from a planning point of view, and also just to make sure, I think in my own head, that we were doing everything that I wanted to do and it was the right send-off. Would you recommend to people not rushing into something? Is there a standard amount of days people should wait? Would you say perhaps to people, take 3 days?
Yeah.
Or, well, does it depend?
From my point of view, I do try to get them to go back and just really think about it. It's a bit like, you know, when you think of something in the middle of the night, don't send that email in the middle of the night, wait till the next morning, kind of stuff like that. And then, you know, from an overall organisational point of view, myself and Gus would always recommend a couple of days, you know, because there is people who will literally come in today at 12 o'clock and want to be buried tomorrow.
Mm.
We have those people. It was a real traditional thing in Ireland a long time ago. They literally would go, they would have the funeral the night before. But yeah, I absolutely.
It has slowed down.
Yeah.
I would
say
the average funeral is nearing 5 days now.
Mm. Yeah.
When I started, it was 2-3
Yeah.
With it all over. Mm. You know, this is before social media and really the internet, and people didn't know.
Mm. Yeah,
so they missed, I heard your man was gone. Oh, he's gone. That's all done.
Yeah. When you think about how long you take to plan, like a 40th or 50th
or a wedding.
Or a wedding. Yeah. It sort of seems ridiculous that somebody's last big sort of hurrah, you just
it's
go
rushed.
Take
I would love, if everybody was like you now, it would be absolutely fantastic. Mm. You know, it really would, because I just can't understand, you know, people do need to reflect on the decisions they've made, and they just think, but we will always say as funeral directors now, just take your time, you know, have a think about it and call us back. And as I said earlier on, I'll repeat myself a couple of times just to make sure that it's going in, that, you know, they're so focused on one thing.
You brought up something so interesting about live streaming. And like, that is so amazing that people traditionally, especially in this country, who family members, children of some, a parent or whatever, would be gone and not able to come home for the funeral and suffer lifelong problems with never having closure or not having been there, or guilt. We're starting to see a change there because people are able to virtually be there. Is that happening a lot more?
Well, some facilities, like permanent funeral facilities, say like Mount Jerome, would have a built-in camera system. A lot of the churches have just a fixed camera.
Mm-hmm.
It's not wonderful quality, but it's there and you can hear it and you can see it. And, you know, this has been going on for quite a while.
Yeah, no, in fairness, we've built a couple of funeral homes in the last couple of years and we put it in. And amazing, you know yourself, it's a problem with the broadband that goes down, like, you know, the funeral director ring me, oh, Jonathan, it's gone down, what are we going to do? And I said, relax, get out your phone and just
Facebook it,
it's fine. Mm. Oh, yeah. Mm. And I said, get the person and they'll do it no problem. And they go, oh, yeah. And, like, you know, so you could see a couple of people doing it for that particular person.
Yeah.
And it really worked out really well.
Yeah, I mean, I have to say that's one thing, because one of my best friends is actually in South Africa at the time. And it was sort of like on the actual during the thing. And she went, apparently afterwards, she was like, oh, we should have done Facebook Live. But it's just, again, it's one of those things. You don't think of.
You don't even think
hindsight.
It's an option, probably.
Yeah, like, but I'd say this to you guys. A lot of the time at a funeral, people will come up and they'll have these ideas. You need sometimes step back a little bit and go, oh, hold on a second, let them do it. Like, I'll often say, you get a certain family member and they'll try and do everything. No, if they want, you know, a missalette, let them go and do it themselves, or, you know, like live streaming, let somebody else in the family, because it'll be someone else. Oh, we should do that. Oh, well, you can go and do, you know, you're more than welcome to go and do it, rather than putting too much pressure on one
particular
member.
About like filming? Because I've heard people actually filming
the whole thing. Yeah,
there's a couple of companies that will film a service, and then an hour later it might be put up to a platform that's password protected or even up in YouTube, and people can.
And again, that's personal choice. That's a great thing. If somebody wants to do it, fine. But what you'll have is, in that particular time, that's where it's brilliant, where we started this whole piece, is that the family or deceased should have really this and know that this is going to happen. Because I'm telling you, a lot of families will hate that. I've seen people come in, take photographs in the coffin, and some other family member slaps their camera in, and there's a big row over this, and you're going, what, you know.
But I think that's, isn't that the most divisive thing? That somebody died really, really is. The family. Because it sort of just becomes just.
But if anybody's listening to your podcast, you know, these are the type of things you need to think of. Oh, do you want it filmed? Do you want a photograph in a coffin? Like, you know.
And it'd be good to have that kind of laid, like just like we're saying, laid out early and in advance.
Yeah.
One of the things is the eulogy. It's, I don't know, I you almost see people, like, it's like something takes over, and people generally tend to do a pretty good job at them, but I don't think a lot of people know about what goes on in, like, do you guys have any tips for the person who's been chosen? I think a lot of people don't know, when should I write this? How am I going to write this? Where am I going to do it? How long should it be? Yeah. What, you know, am I going to make a fool of myself? Am I going to cry?
Now, you're asking funeral directors here. So, you know, sometimes even from you two probably give a better answer than we would, because we obviously attend funerals every day where possible, maybe, you know, two or three funerals. And the best advice is obviously to talk about the person that's died, not about yourself, which often happens, and kind of keep it sensibly long, you know, and that's purely up to the person that's doing it. You'll know the crowd. I don't know, if there's 150, 80 and 90 year olds, you know they don't want to hear about what Paddy did over the last kind of 100 years. But if you're talking about a young person to a young crowd, you know you've got the time to talk about it. Again, it's kind of, it's nearly like common sense. I don't know.
I'd say of all the, I don't know, I tried to think how many funerals I've been to. I could say I count on the fingers of two hands the really great eulogies that I've heard. That's it.
And what was the commonality in those?
The commonality was the person could really speak. I think it's cruel to ask someone who's a bit 50-50 or is too close and too upset to do it. That said, I'm sure Jonathan would agree, I'm amazed sometimes with the strength of some immediate family members, even in the most tragic of situations, and they do get up and they speak, and they speak brilliantly about the person. I mean, that is awe-inspiring, that they're able to stand up in front of 300-400 people and do that.
And it is amazing. Gus is right. A particular person in the family is just a better orator than the other person in the family. And you're just hoping that the better person gets up to speak, because they will do a better job. It sounds terrible to say, but they will. And they will kind of show a picture of this person's life. And again, it depends what you want to say. Do you want to tell the funny stories? Do you want to make people laugh?
I think that helps, though, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does.
A bit of humour, definitely. Yeah. It lightens the mood.
Almost essential.
It's up there with the best man speech.
And try not to curse.
That was tricky.
Try not to. That is so hard.
The cost of funerals. I know that can sound a bit of a crass thing to talk about, but it is something that comes up a lot, and it is expensive. I mean, you know, I was a bit put out that Martin's coffin was more expensive than my wedding dress. But anyway, there is when somebody dies, and if it's a young person particularly, you'll see a lot of GoFundMe pages, or it's an expensive thing for a person, and especially if it's sudden, it's an unplanned for expense. What would you recommend to people in relation to that?
Again, it's a bit like what we started. If you have an idea of what you want, it's like anything in life, you're going to spend as much as you want to spend. You can come in, and if somebody says, look, we've absolutely no money, you know, he didn't want to spend any money on his funeral, you know, it will not be expensive, no matter who you talk to. If somebody comes in and they want all the bells and whistles, it's going to be expensive, and it's as simple as that. Like, and I wouldn't, in general terms, I actually wouldn't say funerals are expensive, because if you talk about it, it's one person and you're burying them once. I know what you're saying.
But I think it's like sudden. If you're sending your kids to school and you choose school that's going to be $7,000 a year, you sort of plan for that. You sort of go, okay, well, that's going to cost me by six, by three kids. Okay, blah.
But on another side, would you not think, well, I'm going to die at some stage. I need to put something in place.
That's what and I'm then, saying. Yeah. Would you encourage people?
Absolutely.
Even start like, almost like a pension.
Oh, we do.
To be going.
We do.
Yeah, pre-need, as it's called in the industry. I don't like the term industry.
No.
Pre-need.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't like it either.
No, it's not very pervasive in Ireland, but in other more mature markets like UK and US, it's maybe 15-20% of every funeral that's conducted is prepaid.
Oh, absolutely. I think it's a societal thing.
Cost of funerals always comes up. I just think it's people forget the range of things that it includes. And also certain items can really skew the cost. And certainly if you're buying burial space in Dublin, the least you're going to get to spend on that is 3,000 to buy a grave. Wow, the so least.
It's not just rent.
And that's before you've, no. That's before you've done anything. So that is going to skew it. I think the 7-7 nature of the whole business, Jonathan has staff, we have staff on duty Christmas Day, every single day. We've an ambulance team on standby. We're open on Sundays. We've got to staff that, and we've got to pay the staff properly. It would worry me that there would be a race to the bottom in terms of how we pay the people who work for us. We ask them to do a very difficult job.
It is a very difficult job. I think that's one thing that a lot of people would, that isn't obviously involved in the business, would say is, how do you do that job? How do you deal with people day in, day out? How do you go to funerals? And I know you're not directly related to the person, but there must be some that you just
well,
go,
well, clearly
oh
we're
God.
Mad. look at he's frothing over there. The only reason I'm in the business is genetics and DNA, and I'm sixth generation.
Yeah.
I think John's the same. You're third.
Yeah.
There are plenty of times when I question my own sanity. There are moments which do make it worthwhile. I think it's people remember you for what you do, certainly if you've done your job well. You get to meet everybody. It's a very rapid job. You're making instant decisions all the time. So there's, if you're the sort of person, A, that's a people person, and B, likes getting things done and organised, it very much is that.
Yeah.
But yes, there's some really, really
harrowing cases.
Harrowing
yeah.
situations. So, the really harrowing ones, probably there's a natural inclination to forget and move on, and there's always another funeral of something a little bit more normal that you're dealing with. And you do, and I don't take it home.
That's the key.
You
can't take it home.
Ever.
Yeah. So when you're in the moment and you're there, whether it be 8, 10 hours, 12 hours in the day, that's your function. But the minute you go home, so I go home and I see the kids and I just shut off, you know, as in I cut it out. Because if you are to think about it, I mean, 90% of the time, maybe even more, it is a celebration life. You know, people, you know, they know they're going to die. It's those kind of 5, 10% where it's harrowing, somebody drops
kids,
dead. Yeah, kids. Yeah. And absolutely. So,
in terms of empathy, we talk about empathy so much on this podcast. It must be hard to be in that space because you do, like, in my experience, when I sat in and I was planning my parents' funeral, there was a lot of empathy shown to me. When you're in it, so not later on in the day, but when you're in it, I mean, practicing empathy like that, really radical empathy. The person's
absolutely.
In the worst moment of their life and you're sitting a stranger beside them. Mm. What is that experience like?
Well, you know, you have to have a natural ability for it. So obviously, I think everybody in Guts would be the same. All our funeral arrangers, the funeral directors, are, you know, they're natural. They have natural empathy. The minute you see, obviously, everybody comes in. You know, there's like a little probationary period, and you assess them, Now, obviously, one might get by, but it's very rare. And literally, it's just so important to just have that natural empathy.
So
I don't
it's
think
like a vocation.
It is. That's really, I often say that, actually. It is a vocation. And a lot of the people that have come to work with us, you know, they love it. It is something that they've either always wanted to do or they've, you know, we have people who were with us who worked in the banks, they're accountants, and they hated that, but they love being a funeral director. Yeah. They love being able to help people. I think, like, if you're there and it's just your job, you won't survive. Gus will have you out the door. I'll have them out the door immediately. Just go, oh, here, I have to go at 5:30. There's none of that. You need to be able to make sure that you're there to help the people. And as Gus says, like, you have to obviously be able to pay them well enough that they don't mind staying. Like, and again, it's not you're not going to get into a battle over, you know, oh, I can't do this. Everybody, they kind of shortened their lives nearly to help other people. So maybe they were supposed to be home at 6 o'clock to pick up the kids, but their families with them, you know, they'll stay then and maybe because
you're hardly
going
to be trying to rush out the door, look at your at your watch. I think that's hard though, because like doctors or nurses, you can't really have a bad day. You know, you're like if you
there's a similar mentality to a doctor or nurse, certainly in A&E, who are dealing with, and they put on their professional hat when they go into work at 8 o'clock in the morning, and they deal with some awful stuff and some really good stuff. You know, fixing stuff and making people better, but they also have a lot of bad news to deal with, and they certainly any friends of mine that are doctors, there's a collegiate almost trench-like mentality in a way. I think that they develop and learn. You're not going to, yes, you may be naturally empathetic, but you do have to learn it as well, I think, Jonathan. I think you have to prepare yourself for it.
That's a life skill, though. It's not like most people that come into the industry are, you know, in their kind of 40s, 50s.
Been around the block a bit.
Yeah. So I think they've already naturally learned that. I mean, what do they think they're coming into otherwise? You know, you're going to be dealing with people no matter what, even if the person's 80 or 90. Like one of my best friend's dad died there last year, and like he was really, really upset by it all. You know, he was 83 and he was dying for a long time. And I was taken aback by just how upset he was. Like he could barely talk to me. And I was taken aback. So again, teaches me another lesson that when you're.
Yeah, I learned that lesson very early on. I made a value judgment about, just as Jonathan did, I prepared myself to think what I felt this person should be feeling, because the person was 98 and had a fantastic life. And they were devastated. This was the worst thing ever. And I, part of me went, okay, people deal with this differently. I'm not going to judge.
I'm
not going to judge them.
Yeah, that is like a big thing that we've talked about on this podcast. People feel judged in their grief, and people judge grief and all that kind of stuff.
And how do you deal with it?
Yeah, I mean, do you encounter that where people are kind of like always feeling like, I should do this, I shouldn't, maybe I should do this, like they're worried about other people's expectations?
And I say that when I'm ranging with you, I say, guys, remember, it's, you know, don't worry about everybody else. Like you get to see some families getting all caught up, oh, we're going to be 5 minutes late. I say, listen, you're going to be 5 minutes, so what? Oh, you know, Paddy's not going to make it in time, he'll be fine, we'll get him here, you know, stuff like that. You don't judge, and you try and teach them that. It's just, it's the funeral director's role, the funeral arranger's role, just say, look, it's okay, we'll manage, it's fine. And it is kind of stressful situation, all right, but once you can kind of manage that and say it in a tone that they go, all right, this fella knows what he's talking about. No matter what we do, and I said it earlier on, something happens every single day. I learn something new every day anyway. So a case of, I'm trying to then teach, you know, families as well at the same time, because as you guys said, a lot of people haven't been through this before. So hopefully they listen. Most people do, I think.
Yeah, but I think it's a different situation possibly every time, because even if you've lost someone, another person might be closer to you or might be sort of, do you know what I mean, in a different position. So each funeral or each stage would be different.
Yeah.
You know,
when I'm with a family, and I'll tell them, now listen, you're going to get randomers saying weird stuff to you. The reason is they're very nervous about meeting you and talking to you, because you've just had a bereavement.
Yeah, we've talked a lot.
And they say, let's play golf.
And also with the, you know, Irish traditions are quite different. I know we have people that listen to us in the UK and in America and lots of other places, but Irish traditions, like the shaking of the hands, right? That goes on for an extremely long time. A lot of weird stuff is said. Should you bring hand sanitizer? I don't know. There's just so much that goes on.
Probably, yes.
Like, is that still common practice? And do people kind of who maybe have been to a funeral or two go, I don't want to do that. It's a lot for someone.
Well, the removal kind of in the last number of years in Dublin particularly, that has been replaced, because from my experience, loads of people hated that part where they're standing at the top of the church and they're waiting there for a half an hour, 40 minutes, shaking hands with people they don't even know. And that really, from our point of view within our own business, all the families said, oh God, I don't want to do that. So they don't mind outside the church in the morning because they kind of pick and choose. People go, well, there's no point in me going, I didn't know that particular person. So, and I think, you know, that's probably a big part of it.
And what's replaced it, actually, we're doing, and I mean, we've designed a new facility where it's a gathering place in the evening, and it's kind of replaced the removal a little bit, because there is still an element where people are worried, Billy and Jack will miss it because they're working.
The
removal was kind of for that. I mean, removal was a Dublin invention. It's not a right of a church at all. And it was the big employers didn't like people taking time off work to go to funerals.
Funny, because I read that it was the Catholic Church. It's amazing.
There's
a debate there.
Talk to you afterwards.
I think, you know, the whole, from my experience, it seems to be, certainly if it's a younger person, if something at home or at the house seems to have replaced anything like that, sort of, you know, just a word of mouth gathering, you know.
I think we're just becoming less churched, and that's reduced. We're just catching up with everywhere else.
I agree.
It's not unusual.
It's not unusual at all. All throughout Europe, that'd be relatively common. And I totally agree, a younger person. And then it depends on the circumstances. Sometimes if it's like elderly parents, they don't really want, you know, to be making tea and sandwiches, so they'll use the funeral home for that. Yeah. And then you do see people and they often say to me, oh God, I was worn out after that. We had 2 hours of people coming in.
Yeah.
And it's again, they didn't know half the people and they're coming up to me, oh, I knew, you know, Paddy back and whenever. So that drains them. So again, or as you said earlier on, it's kind of nearly sometimes a private, just for close friends and family. Thanks. We'd see everybody else tomorrow at the church and that's fine, you know.
Yeah.
Are there more people bringing up, Venetia brought this up obviously with Martin, where they wanted to play music. I feel like that's a very common one where you want to play a song that isn't a hymn.
Yeah.
And maybe people are even afraid to ask if they can because they've kind of heard that you just can't. It's like a given that you can't. Is that changing?
Well, I mean, all the churches have rules and regs.
Yeah. Mm.
Catholic Church in particular on music. Strictly speaking, it's to be church music. Usually there is a chance to play something non-churchy at the end.
Rarely.
At the beginning, but a lot of them, you know, rail against it.
Rail against
it. They didn't. Do you remember there was an announcement that there should be no eulogies?
Yeah.
And about 2 weeks later, Albert Reynolds died. And his funeral was in Dublin. And it was televised live to the nation. And there was 4 eulogies. I'm open to correction, but there was at least 3.
Yeah, yeah.
That didn't help.
Yeah. But I don't think, I mean, I think the Dublin Diocese came together and realized, oh, look, we can't get rid of the eulogy. And, you know, I think either some of the priests do it at the start of the Mass now. Most people do it as the traditional time. But in terms of music, like, we'd always recommend to have it in the crematorium if, you know, the local priest or whatever doesn't want to do it. And then Humanist Service, we have services in the funeral home. We built a new funeral home in Ballyfermot. It's huge. And you can literally have a service there. Have whatever you want, you know, whether it's a civil service, humanist service, and play all the music you want. Because I find in those particular cases, it's really just a big eulogy. It's literally 45 minutes of a eulogy. So different people take different stages, because obviously you have the liturgical side is gone. And then they may go on, because sometimes they don't go to the crematorium at all, because you don't need to. You've done everything you need to do in the funeral home.
Is that something, though, you'd recommend to people to think about before they decide even where they have the service? I mean, I was very lucky because my sort of pally with my local rector, and, you know, he came to me, somebody actually from where I live had passed away 2 weeks before, and he came to me with the order of service and was suggesting stuff, and I was like, no, we're having this, and this. And he was like, that's grand, that's cool, have one hymn and you can have whatever else you want. So I sort of did a deal. But if I hadn't been allowed that, would that be sort of a case where you go, okay, well, actually, do you know what? I'm having it somewhere else.
Yeah. For some people, that would be a deal breaker.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And actually, for certain people, certain parts of a funeral are the most important thing. And I'll give you a slightly humorous example, if I may.
You may.
Edit it out.
You're allowed to.
We like you.
I get this phone call, and it was an awfully nice man at the end of the phone. Gas, yes, look. I booked the yacht club for lunch on Friday.
I probably know this person.
I booked the yacht club for lunch on Friday. Is there any chance we could have Mother's funeral on Friday morning? So I said, well, okay, I'll just take some information. And what's Mother's name? And it was a very long treble barrel name. And living in some beautiful castle somewhere in Fox Rock. And then, where is Mother at the moment? I said, that thieving nursing home somewhere in Black Rock. And I said, now, okay, was it last night or this morning that Mother passed? Oh no, she hasn't gone yet. So lunch was more important, really. All about the lunch.
Keeping on the theme of inappropriate questions, was it kind of an exciting, I know this is a terrible thing, but exciting that this has started to happen where you guys are rethinking the funeral? Because for so long, it was this, like, you go here, you go to this church, you do it this way, and now there's this opportunity.
Well, that was a perception of it.
Yeah. I wouldn't say it was exciting, but it is, from a motivational point of view, or even from doing something every single day, it's brilliant that you have all these different choices. Doing the same thing all the time, the monotony of it. I mean, my father and probably Gus's father, they were worn out from it over the years. They literally go, oh my God. Whereas we have so much
variety.
Like,
massive. Fantastic. Every day.
Even coffins have changed.
But often people come and sit in front of Jonathan. They know what they don't want, and usually they don't want to be in church, but they don't know what they want. So Jonathan go, well, you can do A, B and C, or 1, 2, 3, 4, blah, 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 blah. But that's putting a lot of pressure on Jonathan to be an event organiser.
Yeah.
Provider of solutions, that's which is what we've always done.
Yeah, it is, yeah.
So we've got better. I think all the companies in Dublin and the rest of Ireland have got better at maybe making suggestions that that will work.
Yeah,
yeah. Work for a family.
Too. Yeah.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Is there a little bit of like reading between the lines and reading as in to like judging people by their personality?
I was going to say that. Yeah, I was. Yeah, I was going to say that. You have to. Yeah,
absolutely. Assess the person.
Yeah, and hopefully, as you sit there, and as I said at the start, you listen, and just the more they talk, then you can start going, okay, maybe you'd like this. And obviously then sometimes go, oh no, God, I don't want that, you know. But it's rare enough. I think when you sit with someone for 45 minutes to an hour, you usually get a good idea of what they want. I hope so, otherwise I'm not doing a very good job. But as Gus said, the key is you're there to make sure that you've done a good job, effectively, you know, to listen. And I would say the most important thing is that, and again, I hark back to it, is that everything goes well. It's what they wanted, you know. The family, they all have a talk. And as you say, I know it's difficult sometimes, even when a family is split or, you know, there's a few issues in the family. But even then, they come back and say, thanks for that. We did. We took your advice and, you know.
It's a lot of responsibility.
It is. Really.
Yeah, the hard part is, you know, for that person, for that nearest next who kin, the husband, the wife, the brother. It's the only funeral in Ireland in the last 10 years.
Absolutely.
And they don't want to know that Jonathan has another six on that morning.
No.
So from a practical point of view, from a logistical and just a whole geography point of view, that's the challenge that Jonathan has every morning. And us as well. So I suppose after a long time you get better and better at it, and you have to rely on a hell of a lot of people all the time to get it done. So it's our suppliers and third parties and staff really have to be on their A game every day.
The team is so important, like everybody around you backing you up, helping you out, because obviously we're not always around, so we do need a break. You know, Gus probably does his 10-day shifts or 12-day shifts, and at that end of that time you do need your break, you know. You need to go off. And certainly my wife wouldn't be too happy when I say, oh no, hold on, I have to delay that few days. She's not too pleased. So I've learned to stop doing that. I used to do it when I was younger, and it actually would drain me.
So thank you anyway both for coming in and doing this episode today. I mean, as Sasha and I said at the beginning, it's something we both wanted to do from the get-go, because I think having been through it both ourselves, we realise how important it is to celebrate the person as they were, in the right way, and in a way that afterwards you can always go, well, we gave them the best send off. Gus Nichols from Nichols Funeral Directors and Jonathan Stafford of Stafford's Funeral Homes, thank you very much.
Thank you very much having us.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.